Academy Hotel and Casino. Our play of the game is the stat line of Bobby Portis, more specifically in the first half, where Bobby Portis scored 24 points, third most points he has scored in a half in his NBA career. It is the second time this season Bobby Portis has had a half with 20 or more points. The first was before last night, the previous home game against the Boston Celtics, when Bobby had 22 points in a first half that saw the Bucks stretch their lead to 37 at halftime. So Bobby Portis, his performance tonight is our play of the game, brought to you by Pottawatomie Casino Hotel. Find your win at the Midwest Premier Gaming, Entertainment, and Hotel Destination. All of that and more waits for you at Pottawatomie Casino Hotel. And with this win, you also win at Wendy's. After this victory, stop by any participating Wisconsin Wendy's and score yourself a free small Frosty. No purchase necessary, but the offer is only good for 24 hours, so you better act fast. When the Bucks win, you win at Wendy's. 18-point win here in the regular season home finale as the Bucks take down the Magic. Behind that, Bobby Portis performance. We'll get you up to speed on the NBA scoreboard and what it means in the standings as we approach the final weekend of the regular season. Before we do that, let's pause 10 seconds for station ID on the BMO Bucks Radio Network.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
117-99, final score. The Bucks now two games remaining, and again, a magic number of just one to clinch the two seed in the Eastern Conference. We'll take a look at the rest of the scores and the updated standings after this on the BMO Bucks Radio Network.
What's your go-to when the cold winds of winter blow? A heavy coat? A hat? For many of us, it's lip stuff, too. But did you know one of the most popular brands, Carmex, the one in the little yellow tube or tub, is a Wisconsin product? It's made in Franklin, a suburb of Milwaukee, and it's shipped to more than 60 countries every year. So can you guess the original use for Carmex? Fixing squeaky doors, actual lip balm, or to soften baseball gloves? The answer coming up. Alfred Woolwig created Carmex in the kitchen of his Dodge County home in Rubicon in 1937. He hand-poured thousands of jars until deciding to automate the manufacturing process in the 70s. Now, can you guess the original use for Carmex when it was created more than 80 years ago? It's always been meant to be a lip balm, but people use it on other dry or itchy skin areas too. It remains a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network. There are so many traditions built around the Wisconsin Badgers, game day and the mascot, which in 1889 was a real badger. It didn't go well. Eventually, the animal was replaced by a person. An on-campus contest chose the official mascot name, Buckingham U. Badger. Still, Wisconsin's official animal is a badger. But do you know which animal almost earned this title instead? Gray squirrel? White-tailed deer? Black bear? The answer is coming up. The original badger's nickname is actually associated with lead miners in the state, not the animals. It was the 1820s, and the miners often didn't have shelter in the winters, so they lived like badgers, digging tunnels into the hillsides where they worked. So was there almost another state animal? Yes, the white-tailed deer, which later became the official wildlife animal. But the history surrounding the badgers is a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Wrapping things up here on the BMO Bucks Radio Network of Justin Garcia as the Bucks beat the Orlando Magic 117-99 and to now guarantee themselves home court advantage in the first round of the playoffs, guaranteed to finish no lower than fourth in the Eastern Conference. Let's go ahead and take a look at your NBA scoreboard for this evening as we had seven other games being played. Tomorrow we have five games played. Friday night, there are 15 games being played. All 30 teams play on Friday night, and here's the wrinkles to the schedule. All 30 teams play Friday. No game Saturday. All 30 teams play on Sunday. But on to those other seven games from this evening, as we have now started to see a handful of those games go final, six of them to be exact, including our game. Starting with those final scores, first up in Cleveland. Boy, for a while, it looked as though maybe the Bucks would be able to say they were guaranteed to finish no lower than third in the Eastern Conference, because the Cavaliers, full-strength Cavaliers, trailed the Memphis Grizzlies by 3 points at halftime. Cleveland, though, would end up winning 110-98 behind 29 points from Donovan Mitchell, while Jake LaRavia finished with a game-high 32 points. So the Cavaliers are 47-33 on the season, two games behind the Bucks. But remember, Cleveland does own the tiebreaker. In Atlanta, Trae Young made his return after a 22-game absence with a ligament injury in one of his fingers. His return did not lift the Hawks to a victory. They lose to the Charlotte Hornets, who get 27 points from rookie Brandon Miller, and the Atlanta Hawks drop to 36-44, two games back of the Chicago Bulls in the loss column with two games remaining. And the Chicago Bulls hold the tiebreaker. So that means the Atlanta Hawks are now locked into the 10 seed. The Bulls will be the 9 seed. In Brooklyn, a meaningless game between the Nets and the Raptors. The Brooklyn Nets win this one 106-102. Dennis Schroeder with 21 points, 9 assists, and 7 rebounds in the win for the Nets. Emmanuel Quickley with 32 points and 9 assists in the loss for the Raptors. In Miami, the Mavericks beat the Heat 111-92 behind a near triple-double from Luka Doncic. 29 points, 9 rebounds, and 9 assists for Luka. The win by the Mavs means they can finish no lower than 5th in the West. The highest they can get is 4th, and with that, we know a first-round series in the West, once again, will be the Mavericks and the Clippers, with the high seed still to be determined in these final two regular season games. And in Oklahoma City, the place the Bucks will head next, the Thunder beat the Spurs 127-89. Josh Giddey, another near triple-double, finishing with 20 points, 12 rebounds, and 7 assists. The Spurs played this game, by the way, without Victor Wembanyama. Thunder played without Chet Holmgren. Two games in action as we speak, and they're both relatively big. The Phoenix Suns up 31-27 on the Los Angeles Clippers. Same two teams played last night, and the Clippers won that game without Kawhi Leonard and without James Harden. The Clippers are playing tonight without Kawhi Leonard, without James Harden, without Paul George, without Russell Westbrook, and without Ivica Zubac, and they are down by just 2 points at 31-29 very early in the second quarter. The only other game is at halftime. That is taking place in Denver. It is a showdown between the top two records in the Western Conference, the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Denver Nuggets. And there is one important note here. The Timberwolves already have the tiebreaker over both the Nuggets and the Oklahoma City Thunder. So in the event of a tie, the Timberwolves would break the tie. They would win that with both of those teams. They are in a very good spot to lock up the one seed in the Western Conference, and they lead the Denver Nuggets by 3 at halftime, 52-49. So with those scores out of the way, your updated look at the standings, as we have referenced, what we know in the East is this. The Boston Celtics are the one seed. We now know the Chicago Bulls are the 9 seed and the Atlanta Hawks are the 10 seed. Everything else is to be determined. We know the Bucks and the Knicks can both finish no lower than 4th in the Eastern Conference. So everything in between there is still evolving. Again, with this win tonight, the Bucks are guaranteed to finish no lower than fourth. So they will have home court advantage in the first round of the postseason. They are two games in front of the Cavaliers. They are three games in front of the Magic and three games in front of the Indiana Pacers. So one by one, we already knew the Bucks could not finish seventh coming into play tonight. They were guaranteed to be a top six team, and now the sixth-seeded Pacers cannot catch the Bucks, and the fifth-seeded Magic cannot catch the Bucks. Losses in either of the final two games by the Cavaliers and by the Knicks would guarantee neither of those teams could catch the Bucks either, or just one more win from the Bucks in either of these two remaining games, Friday night in Oklahoma City against the Thunder and against Sunday against the Orlando Magic. So here's what it looks like. Bucks are a game up on the Knicks right now as the 2 seed. The Knicks are the 3 seed. New York is a game up on the Cavaliers, who are currently the 4 seed. The Magic are currently the 5th seed, but they are tied with the Indiana Pacers. Orlando holds the tiebreaker. Both Orlando and Indiana are 46 and 34. And then you have the Philadelphia 76ers as the 7th seed. They are 45 and 35, one game back of potentially moving as high as 5th in the Eastern Conference. The Miami Heat are 44 and 36. They are 2 games behind both the Magic and the Indiana Pacers. And taking a look at the standings here, the Miami Heat do hold the tiebreaker against the Magic. They do not have it against the Indiana Pacers. So still a chance Miami could move up to 6th, though a lot of things would need to happen for that to take place. I mentioned there are a lot of games being played on Friday night, a handful tomorrow, 5 games tomorrow. We'll start with the games that carry no importance in the postseason, the Chicago Bulls and Detroit Pistons. That tips at 6 o'clock tomorrow. Again, we already know the Bulls will be the 9 seed. The Pistons are not in the postseason. The Houston Rockets and Utah Jazz play at 8 o'clock. Both of those teams also eliminated from postseason contention. But games that are important, we'll get to the Eastern Conference one in a moment, but start with the 2 games taking place in the West. The Golden State Warriors go to Portland to play the Trailblazers. The Warriors right now are tied in the loss column with the Los Angeles Lakers. However, that win last night over the Lakers guaranteed the Warriors the tiebreaker. So in the event those two teams remain tied, the Warriors would move past the Lakers. They are currently the 10th seed. The Lakers are the 9th seed. But the Warriors now suddenly just 2 games behind the Phoenix Suns and only 1 game behind the Sacramento Kings. Suns are the 7th seed. Kings are the 8th seed. And speaking of the Kings, they also play tomorrow as Sacramento hosts the New Orleans Pelicans at 9 o'clock. And right now, Pelicans are only a game in front of the Suns, 2 games in front of the Sacramento Kings in those tight Western Conference standings. And the big one in the East, as we just referenced, is the New York Knicks and the Boston Celtics. That game is being played in Boston. If the Knicks lose that game, the Bucks are guaranteed to finish no lower than 3rd. And if the Cavaliers would also lose Friday or the Bucks beat the Oklahoma City Thunder, you could go into the final game of the regular season knowing you have already wrapped up the 2 seed if you're the Bucks. All 30 teams play on Friday nights, and again, no games on Saturday. All 30 teams play on Sunday. The big ones on Friday, the 76ers and the Orlando Magic, and the Cavaliers and the Indiana Pacers. The Knicks also host the Brooklyn Nets, and of course the Bucks and the Oklahoma City Thunder. Our next game broadcast is that matchup, the Bucks and the Oklahoma City Thunder. It takes place in OKC Friday night, 7 o'clock tip time. 6:30 is when our pregame coverage begins on these networks. For those of you listening in Milwaukee, a reminder, our extended postgame show gets started as soon as we wrap things up here on the BMO Bucks Radio Network. We invite you to stick around for Bucks Talk. We'll take your texts, your calls, your thoughts on this performance tonight. The Bucks navigating the final two games of the regular season without Giannis, and all of the latest on the seeding scenarios. We'll get into all of that and more on Bucks Talk, which you can find on our ESPN affiliate in Milwaukee, 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee. Again, Bucks Talk gets started as soon as we wrap things up here on the BMO Bucks Radio Network. For the rest of you, Friday night is when we reconvene for Bucks basketball. Again, a 7 o'clock tip, 6:30 is when the pregame coverage begins on these airwaves. For Dave Kane, for our statistician Tom Hecker, our engineer Ryan Elliott, and our team back at the BMO Bucks Radio Network studios, engineer Max Meyerson and our producer Chris Larson, I am Justin Garcia signing off, reminding you we will talk once again Friday night with more Bucks basketball right back here on the BMO Bucks Radio Network.
We've been doing this since 1997, and we know that hiring a contractor can be really stressful. And we just want you to know that from the first phone call to the final piece, we really want you to have peace of mind through the whole experience.
My experience with Crum in one sentence would be that I would do it all over again.
Crum Exteriors featuring Kangaroo Roof. We hop to it. 715-246-6090. CrumExteriors.com.
Battleground. Purple. Swing State.
Pretend like I can get inside the heads of those folks to articulate exactly what they're feeling or thinking. But, you know, I will say, you know, it is perfectly normal to be skeptical about a leapfrog technology, right? You know, or moving from the rotary phone to smartphones, okay? So I get it. It is whether you're uncomfortable with technology or you're just used to doing things a certain way. But I also think there's a bit of a political agenda here, and that there's some on the right that want to turn like batteries into the new mask, right? And it's just a cultural delineator. And that's an enormous mistake, because I think that, I don't know the time frame here, Rick, but it could be a decade, two decades, three decades. At some point in time, we're all going to be driving EVs, okay? That's just where the technology is headed, just like with the smartphones, okay? That's where we are headed. The only thing that is in question is how fast that's going to occur, number one, and then who's going to be making these vehicles? That's number two. And in the case of smartphones, even though we were pioneers in terms of the technology, almost all of the production occurred in China, and it still occurs in Asia. And we still don't make a single mass market smartphone in the United States. And so I want to be in the position when EVs really do catch fire, and they will, you know, it's just the early adopters right now. But when they do catch fire, that we're the country that's supplying them, and that it's not Mexico, it's not Korea, it's not China, it's in the United States. And it's because that means that there's going to be a whole lot of people who have good jobs in a lot of different states, not only making the EV vehicles, but also in the supply chains that are going to be supporting that manufacturer.
No, and I agree with you. It's inevitable that electric vehicles are the future. What I find interesting is, you know, all of these complaints, again, some I agree with. Look, I don't necessarily want central control and command of my vehicle. I don't want someone to be able to flip a switch and drive me wherever they want me to go. And look, there are some very real concerns there. How about we deal with that? Use the outrage, the anger, all the passion that's going into dealing with the problems that potentially could come up.
Yeah. Connected vehicle data security is a big concern. What most people don't realize is that their internal combustion engine vehicle is already connected if it's a relatively new model.
Shh.
And there's the ability there have been documented successes at this. I know you've seen them too, where people have hacked into to vehicle systems. And so that's not limited to EVs. Like, that's with us right now, and that's a matter of data security and privacy and protection. No matter what kind of mobility choice that we're making in the United States. But I know one thing for damn sure, I don't want them to be Chinese vehicles, because then it's almost guaranteed that your data is getting back in some way on demand to the Chinese government. That would be a huge mistake. But that's not, that's not reason alone to give them up. And I just want to focus just on performance for a second. You rightly point out that, as a truck driver, any kind of driver, the experience in refueling is different for gas powered versus EV right now. And that's totally true. Okay. That is true, but it is changing and it is getting better every day. And it is not too far on the horizon where you'll see in a parking lot of a grocery store or, a retail store, something that looks like a gas station, but will have those chargers, where you'll be able to go into that retail store and your car will be charged by the time you come out. And so it's a little bit of a different pattern for folks. Or if you sit down in a restaurant, it's going to be the same kind of thing. Or as you point out, Rick, at a truck stop, the technology will be there to get you from 10% up to 80% in the same amount of time, pretty much as if you went in there and you took a bathroom break, you got a bite to eat, you stretched your legs or whatever, you made a couple of calls and you come back out.
Yeah,
right?
No. Yeah, I brought that up to you during the break is, I've been seeing all these social media posts of people going, in 15 minutes you can refuel a truck and, be on the road and drive 1,200 miles. And I'm going, I don't know. I've never been in and out of a truck stop in 15 minutes. I don't know what you're talking about. Because it's at least an hour every time I stop in one of these truck stops. Let's at least talk on the right levels. But I'm hoping you're right. I'm hoping we get to the place where, it's just something different, the nightmare that they've presented for us.
Right. And it will, and this is the thing, it's like, name a technology that was perfect when it was first introduced, right? Whether it's anything in robotics or anything in electronics, they work the glitches out. And that's where we're beyond the beta phase now. Now it's just a matter of building up that capacity.
Right.
And it will come. And I will just say, as someone who, has been in a number of electric vehicles and in internal combustion engine vehicles, there is a lot to love about the acceleration and performance of those EVs. It is pretty extraordinary. Once you experience it. And there is also a great joy in not paying a dime for gasoline, I'm just going to say. So it feels really good not to do that. And so people will catch on to that and word will spread. But it is again, we're at the very early stage of this. It's like the people you saw initially who had the iPhones and you're like, oh, that'll never catch on.
No, not the iPhones, the bag phones. I remember having a bag phone going, oh, right. This is garbage. I don't know why I pay for this.
Yeah, that's right. We're kind of in, we're struggling through. Again, this happens all the time with like the types of work that we do. And, I'm old enough where I took like a typewriting class in high school. You may have as well, where you learned how to type on an actual typewriter. And then within 5 years, no one was using typewriters anymore. So it's going to happen.
Yep.
But I want the jobs to be here. If you adopt the Republicans' approach to this, there will be EVs in the United States eventually, and they'll all be made in China. And that's going to be a terrible outcome, one that we don't want to see.
No, because, I was just reading an article. I think it was at the Wall Street Journal. They were talking about the next shock of China's dumping. Wow. And flooding, the world with cheap stuff. And, my mind goes to, for decades now, I've been talking about how bad tearing down, capital and capital borders are, and how bad it's been for tearing down borders for goods and services, because you're going to have someone like this who is going to dominate the industry and drop the floor out of the bottom. And that's bad for economies that are high wage economies like ours. And for me, I think we're in a moment where potentially maybe we start erecting some of those borders again to protect our industries and our way of life and our standard of living. And yes, I'm a protectionist. I make no bones about it. I'm not an isolationist. I've said this before. When I leave the house, I lock the door. I don't have a giant moat around my house, but I do make sure that what we need in our home is protected. I think as a country, we've got to start thinking that way again.
Yeah, there is no shame in defending your jobs and defending your quality of life, right? I mean, that is what we all are built to do. And I think what we expect our policymakers to do as well. And so the challenge that you point out is that first, China has had a head start on all of this. They viewed EVs very much as a leapfrog technology early and invested a ton of money in it and used our technology, basically through joint ventures or forced technology transfers or just outright theft, and build up the capacity to do this with tens of billions of dollars in state subsidies. And now they have so much industrial capacity in automobiles in China that it's about 5 to 10 million units more than they have demand in China. And so that's 5 to 10 million units that they need to sell somewhere else in the world. And just, the U.S. auto market in any year is about a $15 million unit market, which is large, but it can't absorb the kind of shock that you would see coming from these Chinese imports, which, by the way, are also impossibly priced. It's right. Like you can get an SUV for like $14,000, and you're like, how is that even possible? It's like, well, if you have a supply chain that's built on slave labor, if you have all these massive subsidies, and if you're selling it cheaper here, in other markets, that's what you can do. And so that's going to be the playbook. And we've seen it. We know how this turns out, Rick. We've seen it in steel. We saw it in glass. We saw it in paper. We saw it in semiconductors. We saw it in microelectronics. We know how it turns out is that we will just become consumers rather than producers. And it will not make our country better off if we're just consumers of automobiles and not producers of them.
It comes back to the question I keep asking, and I've been asking for years: are you a worker first or a consumer first? And that's gonna guide your choices on who you vote for, on what you purchase, on all of that stuff. Are you worried about your job, or hey, I can get cheap stuff, get a whole basket full of it? Now, the thing that gets me is, I look at where our politicians are, and they seem to be, especially on the right, bashing these EVs. And I talk to, working people every day who don't know what's really going on because our media seems to be all over the place.
Yeah.
I don't think the Biden administration has done a good enough job of going, hey, look, we're investing in these facilities. These are real people getting real jobs. This is real infrastructure being built. This is a real future. Or am I just, maybe not seeing the right things?
You are totally seeing it. And here's the thing. I mean, this is very dangerous for Republican lawmakers to do, because if you look at the states where you've seen a lot of this EV investment, you're looking at places like Michigan and Ohio, you're looking at Tennessee and Kentucky, you're looking at Alabama and Georgia. And, a couple of those states are swing states, right? And so it is like there's great peril in that. And there are workers right now who I guarantee are registered Republicans who have a job building batteries or building EVs who are, if they see their lawmakers are like, want to put them out of business, that's not a good look for a policymaker to have. So they ought to really think twice about how politicized they're trying to make these EVs. And, everybody from Trump on down, I think it's a huge mistake to do this. And yeah, it's easy to poke fun at a new technology, just like it was for the people who had iPhones initially, but there are billions of them sold in the world every year right now, and we don't make a single damn one of them right here. And so that cannot happen with EVs. So we cannot follow where Republicans want to lead us.
No, I'm right there with you, which is why, you know, if we're moving in this direction, I want us to be have the corner on the market, at least domestically. I mean, look, China can produce for China, but I've always
That's
been,
right.
and I say it again, I've said it a million times, I'm a big believer in domestic production for domestic consumption should be made here, especially this kind of cross-border technology with the ability to, well, as you pointed out as well, to be able to control those vehicles from afar. I don't think I want the Chinese Communist government in charge of that. I just don't. But Scott, as always, great stuff. Appreciate the time. I'll look forward to talking to you again real soon.
You bet. Happy to be with you, Rick. Appreciate it.
Our good friend Scott Paul. What do you think? Are EVs the future? You're looking forward to getting one, or are you in the camp of, no, I want my gas guzzler? I want to know. Let me know. Rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Any sprinkles or showers ending, we'll see partly cloudy skies overnight, lower 40s. Showers looking more likely late Thursday afternoon, a mix of clouds and sunshine and breezy northwest winds, highs in the upper 50s. Showers continue Thursday night. It's 50 at our studios.
Say it with me, the Bucks in six. And you could catch every play, every score, every Milwaukee Bucks game on Lake Air Radio, WLAK, 1260 AM in Amory. Your station for the Milwaukee Bucks, your hometown radio refreshed.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matt and Air on Air with Jane Matt and Air. Weekdays 10 till noon on Lake Air 107.5 FM and 1260 AM WLAK and on the Civic Media app.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Well, as the 2024 presidential election rapidly approaches, the importance of talk radio cannot be overstated. Talk radio serves as a vital platform for political discourse, providing a space for diverse voices, yours, mine, ours, and opinions to be heard by millions of folks across the country. In this crucial election year, talk radio has the potential to shape public opinion, influence voter behavior, and even, I hope not, in a way, impact this election. That's why I've asked Michael Harrison to come talk with us. He's the founder and publisher of Talkers Magazine, the talk radio Bible, the go-to publication for everything talk radio. Michael, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, it's great to be with you. Thank you, and thank you for the fine work that you do within this medium.
So let's jump right into this. I hear all the time talk radio is not relevant. Is talk radio relevant in this age of podcasts and the internet?
Well, I have personally been active in talk radio since 1975. And we started Talkers in 1990, and there hasn't been a day that's gone by all the way back to the beginning where I don't answer the question, is talk radio about to die? Is talk radio relevant? Does anybody listen? And lately, there's a lot of, is radio about to die? But they've been saying that for a long time, even before I was even in the business. I've been in the radio business since the late 60s. And people were asking those questions. So, Mark Twain said, the news of my death has been greatly exaggerated. As long as people are asking whether something is still relevant and whether it's dying, that means it's relevant. Otherwise, no one would ask. It would just be gone. So, yes, talk radio is very relevant, and radio is very relevant. And I won't say they're here to stay, but they're going to be here for quite a while going forward.
They may not be the long-term future, but they are the here and now. But, you know, I keep hearing people go, everyone's got a podcast, Michael. It's not the 1950s or the 1940s where radio was king, but how much reach do you think talk radio has compared to other forms of media in this moment? The podcast, the internet, the YouTubes, all that stuff.
The only forms of media that are really, really growing and dominant are the big tech media, YouTube, Facebook, X, Instagram. the big tech media have taken the lunch out of the traditional media's, you know, off the table. And mostly in advertising and in terms of buzz. So I would say that all media here in the 21st century, and we're getting deeper into the 21st century, we've got a quarter of it already under our belts, all media is fighting more competition for increasingly smaller pieces of the media pie. This is not a radio thing. Look at movies, look at television, look at newspapers, magazines, look at the record industry. They've been so disrupted by the fractionalization imposed by digital media. So to single radio out is not, it's not an accurate or a fair depiction. With that being said, radio remains relative to itself and to the here and now, as you point out, extremely important. I'm not going to get into the most important medium and all of that because times are changing so quickly. The question is rhetorical at this point.
And the reality is, you know, anyone can have a podcast. It's a matter of is anyone listening to it? And, you know, we're on about 50 stations across the country and we get feedback from people all across the country. Our podcast, you know, doesn't have the same numbers that our radio audience does because honestly, we don't spend a lot of time promoting that podcast. But, you know, that is part of the future, isn't it? I mean, you've got to, in this day and age, whether you're terrestrial, whether you're on TV as we are, you've got to be in the podcast space. You got to be in the internet space. You've got to be all over the place. You can't just, at least I don't think, be in one arena.
Well, it depends on how you are branding yourself. I mean, the word brand is a very important word, and we can get into a discussion of that for hours. But branding is very important. However, the key is to have all of your different platforms work in harmony as opposed to cannibalize themselves. I mean, so much of the popularity of the aforementioned big tech media platforms was fueled by attention, absolute fawning attention given to them by radio and newspapers and traditional media. It's like, don't you see that it's a competition? Don't you see if you have a radio show, when you say, go listen to a podcast, that in fact, you're telling people to tune out the radio show? Everybody's in competition with everything, including ourselves. Our brand is in competition with the different platforms. So it's important for a media practitioner to get them in harmony and get them balanced so that the brand is promoted, but not at the expense of the place where the numbers are important. I know this it's a little complicated, but these are complicated times. Yeah. Anybody can have a podcast. Look, anybody can have a typewriter or now a keyboard. That doesn't make you the next great American novelist. Anybody can go out and play baseball at the local park. It doesn't make it Yankee Stadium. Anybody can put on a play in their backyard or in the community theater or in their high school, but it doesn't make it Broadway. We can't lose sight of what the big time means. And for radio, for professional radio to survive and succeed, it's got to provide the best audio entertainment out there, or it will just fade into the background like so many podcasts that nobody listened to.
It's an excellent point. And I want to go back to, you know, 2024, the election is you know, only a couple of months away. You know, I look at the talk radio landscape and it is overwhelmingly conservative voices. And I've got friends who believe that because of that prowess, that power that the right has over the talk radio sphere, that potentially you could see this election moving in that direction. Does talk radio have that kind of power?
Well, talk radio, all media has power. Talk radio has tremendous power when it comes to politics. And most commercial talk radio is indeed self-described as conservative. However, all radio is not commercial talk radio. We don't talk about public radio as being radio. We think it's apples and oranges. It's not. Public radio is radio too. It's the same dial, AM, FM, podcasts, online, the whole thing. It's the same basic set of platforms. It's radio and, you know, public radio. And I'm not talking about just NPR because public radio is bigger than just NPR. Public radio will deny that it's left of center. Oh, no, we're, you know, we're not biased. They have their own version of fair and balanced. But the fact of the matter is, basically, when you look at radio, the big picture of radio, all news radio, sports talk radio, news talk radio, and the commercial and the public radio stations, because it's the same dial, I'd say that all points of view are presented. The problem with today's media, and it's part of your question, is that instead of putting it out there and seeing what comes back, today's media practitioners target audiences based on what they see as a vacuum and an opportunity to get an audience and to be able to get clicks and eyeballs and eardrums and sales and subscriptions and likes and all of that stuff. And they cater to what people already believe. In other words, there's a lot of preaching to pre-selected choirs I call it the daily dance of affirmation, telling people what they want to hear, as opposed to telling people what you know, what you think, and let the chips fall the way they may. This has been a major change in the recent, I'd say, 10 years, 15 years, and I find it to be disturbing, and I find it to be dangerous.
Do you think it's the end of the medium, or do you think it will only make it bigger as people seek their silos? I fear that by having, you know, silos in this form where we never talk to each other, we stop talking to each other.
And as a result, we don't have a national popular culture. As a result, it actually disintegrates the foundation of nationhood. And this is a problem facing the United States today, is that we see it as polarization. We see it as insurmountable obstacles to communicating with each other. But it's actually these bubble universes, these echo chambers, as we call them, that are tearing people apart. And when we don't have a common national culture, you know, there's no Ed Sullivan show on Sunday night. We recently had the Oscars. Most people haven't even seen any of the movies and can't even name what movie won. Oppenheimer, because it became part of the pop culture with Barbie. That was in the news. Two movies the whole year. I mean, come on. Think of the world you grew up in. What song is number one on Billboard? Does anybody know? What's the best-selling book in the country? Does anybody know? The popular culture that defines a nation has disintegrated, and therein lies a lot of the problems we're having in terms of cohesiveness and communicating.
Now, if you ask, you know, either side, the red hat or the blue hat, it's the other side's fault. Whose fault is it?
Well, it's all of our fault. Since when has any politician or political party represented pure virtue? I mean, you know, if anything, one of the things we're learning in this era of scams and deceit is that most of our institutions have to protect ourselves from the institutions we used to rely on as being true and supportive and honest. You know, big tech, big pharma, big religion, big government. I mean, the Democrats and the Republicans, neither side can be counted on for truth, honesty, and for heroes. Where are the statesmen or statespeople? Where are they? There has been a deterioration in principles, in the idea of glory, in the idea of a higher principle and something to strive for. These are the problems we face. To fix this is going to take a long time because education becomes involved, parenting gets involved, the principles of a culture. What kind of a culture, what kind of a people are we? When the political parties, Democrats or Republicans, preach fear demonization of the other side. Every little thing demonized. Every little possible flaw that you can find in the opponent cherry-picked and presented. The problems are far greater than who's to blame.
No, but you could make the argument that, you know, talk radio magnifies those differences. You've got politicians who are now more concerned about clicks and views and getting their name on the podcast circuit than actually passing legislation that are going to make people's lives better.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but if you look back in history, the modern technology of social media and the rapid pace at which we communicate with each other and the access we have to everything in the world that ever existed only amplifies something that has always gone on. There's always been yellow journalism. There's always been corruption in politics. If you look up how many elected officials have been arrested or imprisoned, the list is, I thought I was going to find like 20 or 40, hundreds and hundreds over history, all the way back to the beginning. Yeah. Corruption in the public space has always been prevalent. I don't know if things are getting worse. I think they're just getting louder. It's a noisy world, and we're becoming ill from it, while other people thrive on it. A lot of people see this as a blood sport, as a spectator sport. They don't know a damn thing about issues or politics, but they love the battle. They've forgotten the difference between getting excited about the fantasy of a football game and the fantasy in their mind that they have their egos invested in, but not their brains, of a political election.
No, and again, I keep coming back. My true north has always been, how do we make the lives of working people better? How do we make that kid growing up in the housing project that I grew up in, how do we get that kid the opportunities, at least the opportunities that I've had, if not better? And sadly, I don't see that coming out of our politics. So, you know, with the election coming around, what are you seeing as the main messages coming out of talk radio on all sides? Is there a central theme that you see? Because again, we're in our silos of red hat, blue hat. What are you seeing?
What I see is a common theme that you can't trust anybody, that you can't trust the judiciary, that you can't trust the legislature, that you cannot trust the executive branch, that you can't trust your local dog catcher, that you can't trust the DA, that you can't trust the hospitals. I find that there is an increase in distrust. And I believe that if I had to find a common theme of talk radio or any of the talk media that talk radio has spawned, or any opinion, editorial-oriented media, I find that to be the predominant message, is that you can't trust anybody.
No, I'm right there with you. Michael, I appreciate the time. I want to pick up some more of this on the other side in our podcast forum. But Michael Harrison, Talkers Magazine, appreciate the time.
Thank you, Rick.
For our Free Speech TV audience, for our radio affiliates across the country, if you want to check out more of my conversation here with Michael Harrison, go to our website, thericksmithshow.com, where you will find the full interview with Michael Harrison of Talkers Magazine. Going to take a quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 2006. That was the day of massive protests for immigrants' rights in cities throughout the United States. Starting in March of 2006, there was a series of coordinated protests in response to a bill passed by the United States House of Representatives. The bill would classify undocumented workers as felons, and it proposed a wall be built along one-third of the U.S.-Mexican border. In total, more than 5 million people across the country protested that spring. And on this day, protests were held in more than 100 cities. On May 1st, or May Day, large protests reached numbers not seen since the civil rights demonstrations of the 1960s. CNN described the impact of the protests in Chicago, reporting kids skipped school, men and women walked off their jobs, others didn't bother to go to work, businesses shut down for lack of patrons or employees. The protesters dubbed the May Day event a day without immigrants. The aim was to withhold immigrant labor and buying power to show their impact on the U.S. economy. A study by the Pew Hispanic Center found that at the time, undocumented workers made up 24% of farm labor and 14% of construction labor in the United States. The protests had an impact. The bill that would harshen penalties for undocumented workers did not pass the Senate. The AFL-CIO also recognized the importance of reaching out to immigrant workers. In August of 2006, the AFL-CIO introduced a national worker center partnership. For the first time, worker centers, many of which organize immigrant workers, could enter into formal partnerships with the AFL-CIO. Working with immigrant workers remains an important front in today's labor movement.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
new study commissioned by the International Institute for Democracy and Electoral Assistance. International IDEA is the name of the group. What they found, and I guess not surprising, voters around the world have shown widespread skepticism around the idea that elections are free and fair, and many favor a strong and undemocratic leader. And it's kind of shocking to me that we're in this moment, because understand, we've been pursuing this idea of democracy, of rule of the governed, my entire lifetime. This has been the great American experience. The survey, the Perceptions of Democracy survey, polled voters in 19 countries, including three of the world's largest democracies, Brazil, India, and here at home in the U.S. And oh, well, not great. In the U.S., experts evaluated the terms. Understand, we're supposed to have the most highly performing democracy, while only 47% of the people who responded said that they had faith in a credible electoral process. You got to give the right wing credit. They have really done a masterful, and look, the left as well. They've done a masterful job at tearing at elections. 17 of the 19 countries polled, fewer than half, according to this study, fewer than half of the people are satisfied with their government, and only four countries have a majority of people who feel that they're doing better than their parents. 11 of the 19 countries, fewer than half of the people say that the last election was free and fair. In 18 of 19 countries, fewer than half of the people believe the courts always or often provide access to justice. In India and in Tanzania, a majority of the population are satisfied with the government's their performance. India and Tanzania also stand out as countries with relatively high levels of support for a strong leader, they don't have to bother with that whole, you know, parliament or elections or any of that. Colombia, Romania, Brazil, and Sierra Leone, the poorest in society, they say that they approve of government performance over the rest. I found it interesting that in Iraq, Iraqis have more faith in access to justice in their court system, 28% always or often, than we do here at home, 26%. You stop and you think about that one thing. Things have become so polarized, so politicized, so demonized that the court system, which used to be the place where we sought some bit of fairness, where the person at the front of the court was supposed to be the arbiter of justice, not of ideology. And what we've done with this system, again, we've destroyed what was a great system by political polarization. I know. But Rick, you know, the court systems of, you know, it's always done. Not to this level. I mean, I look at what's going on in the red hat, blue hat world. And the first thing, and I do it too, I'm now of the mindset, who appointed them? There used to be this deference to law, this love of the law, this idea that the law was above red hat, blue hat, Democrat, Republican. It was above that. It was the foundation of this country. And when you undermine the rule of law, when you destroy that institution that the people believe is going to, you know, at least be somewhat fair, you know, Lady Liberty and justice with the blindfold, and, you know, we're gonna balance it out. It's one of the ways authoritarian leaders weaken democracy. If you weaken the rule of law, if you get the electorate to believe that there's no such thing as fairness, that there are no rules that apply, that the rich and the powerful can manipulate the legal system, that, you know, you can use law enforcement to target your political opponents. The fact that, and this is what blows my mind, the fact that law enforcement has become such a political football. I said from the very beginning, we had someone on the show who said, well, we're going to defund the police. And I'm like, no, that's dumb. Don't do that. We're not defunding the police. You should fund the police to where they have more resources to be able to deal with certain issues differently. I'm all in favor of that, but don't say dumb things like defund the police. It's bad messaging and it's bad policy. How about we stop allowing the police to deal with all of societal's problems? How about we stop creating an environment where they're the trash collectors and have to deal with all of society's ills? Because we've cut funding to mental health, we've stopped trying to defeat poverty, we've stopped trying to end homelessness, we've stopped trying to do all of these things while then heaping all these mandates on the police. As I said from the beginning, I support the police when they're not wrong. When they're doing their job, when they're doing what we ask them to do, when we're doing what we have tasked them to do, I am 100% in support. Now, do you get some people who go outside of that? Yeah. And those folks I don't support. See, we used to be able to think like this, but evidently it's become hot potato. It's red hat, blue hat. I got to be on one side, the other's got to be on the other side, and we shall fight each other. Without any, hey, we actually do need police. You need some bit of law enforcement. You need some bit of stability. And this is what the authoritarian crowd wants. They love the fact that the law is now, well, it's a patronage game. And this idea that elections are all jerry-rigged and, you know, you can do all kinds of voter suppression and voter fraud and intimidate people and do all the things that authoritarians of the past have always done. It's one of the ways you destroy democracy. You manipulate elections. It's the reason Saddam Hussein got 98% of the vote. It's the reason Vladimir Putin gets, you know, an outrageous number of the vote. Not because people want him, but because it's a rigged game and everyone knows it. We still have the opportunity to go and cast our ballots in free and fair elections. No one has brought forth evidence to say here in this country the election was rigged. Now a lot of people believe it. Oh, they believe to their core. They're the same ones who believed when the solar eclipse was happening that they were going to be raptured up into the sky, and I hope they were, because we could do without them. But we're in this moment where this election really is about, do you believe in democracy or do you not? You know, we could talk about all the other things, and I do, the economic side of things, the justice side of things, the good policy on reshoring manufacturing and investing in infrastructure and helping our kids and helping the homeless, all that stuff. But if democracy dies, all that goes with it. None of it matters. If this wonderful experiment of self-rule ends because we've allowed the Trumpkins and the MAGA hats and the rest of them to weaken our independent institutions, to destroy the judiciary, to destroy our legislative bodies, to destroy the electoral process. If we allow them to do that and replace them, pack them with loyalists, you know, making patronage great again, this liberty and this freedom that we have as Americans will go away. Because look, we've already got the cult of personality. Donald Trump is that cult of personality that history will remember him for. The propaganda, the rhetoric that we see all around him, this idea that he put his head on Rambo's body and he's the greatest enemy of... It's insane. And the more I look at this, the more I say, you know what? We do need a sense of sanity. And you look at the fact that there is corruption and cronyism and all of the things that are going on around us. And I find it really ironic. Honestly and truthfully, I find it really ironic that the right keeps looking at, pointing at Joe Biden going, he's corrupt, when the guy that, the Trumpkin guy, that's the corrupt guy. But I guess we can't have those conversations, because we've got to quash that ability to interact and to talk to each other and to challenge each other. The hope is we get back out in the streets and we engage in that discussion and that fight for democracy. I want to hear your thoughts. Could this be the last free and fair election that we have in our lifetime, as some have told me? And are you willing to fight for what we have? or watch it go away. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. And as always, I appreciate you being here. See you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@therickssmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to...
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298 DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.